It is a moot point whether burglary is to be considered as a sport, a trade, or an art. On the whole, it seems to be most justly ranked as sport. A sport for which no rules are at present formulated, and of which the prizes are distributed in an extremely informal manner. It was this informality of burglary that led to the regrettable extinction of two promising beginners at Hammerpond Park in Sussex. The stakes offered in this affair consisted chiefly of diamonds and other personal bric-a-brac belonging to the newly married Lady Aveling. The honeymoon was to be spent at Hammerpond. The announcement of these valuable prizes created a considerable sensation in the small circle in which Mr. Teddy Watkins was the undisputed leader. And it was decided that, accompanied by a duly qualified assistant, he should visit the village of Hammerpond in his professional capacity. Being a man of naturally retiring and modest disposition, Mr. Watkins determined to make this visit incog, and after due consideration of the conditions of his enterprise, he selected the role of a landscape artist and the unassuming surname of Smith. He preceded his assistant, who it was decided should join him only on the last afternoon of his stay at Hammerpond. Mr. Watkins, on his arrival with two virgin canvases, a brand new easel, a paint box, a portmanteau, an ingenious little ladder made in sections, a crowbar and wire coils, found himself welcomed with effusion and some curiosity by half a dozen other brethren of the rush. "Have you exhibited very much?" said young Pawson in the bar parlour of the Coach and Horses, where Mr. Watkins was skilfully accumulating local information on the night of his arrival. "Oh, very little," said Mr. Watkins. "Here and there."
"Academy?"
"In course. And at the Crystal Palace."
"Oh, did they hang you well?" said Pawson.
"Don't rot," said Mr. Watkins. "I don't like it."
"I mean, did they put you in a good place?"
"What do you mean?" said Mr. Watkins suspiciously. "I'd think you were trying to make out I'd been put away."
Do you do figure work at all?" Pawson asked.
"No, never had a head for figures," said Mr. Watkins, and added, "I came down here to paint Hammerpond House by moonlight."
"Really?" said Pawson. "That's rather a novel idea."
"Yes," said Mr. Watkins. "I thought it rather a good notion when it occurred to me. I expect to begin tomorrow night."
"What? You don't mean to paint in the open by night?"
"I do, though."
"But how will you see your canvas?"
"I'm going to have a thing called a dark lantern," he said to Pawson.
"But it's about new moon now," objected Pawson. "There won't be any moon."
"There'll be the house," said Watkins, "at any rate. I'm going, you see, to paint the house first and the moon afterwards."
Oh, said Pawson, too staggered to continue the conversation.
"They do say," said old Durgan, the landlord, who had maintained a respectful silence during the technical conversation, "as there's no less than 3 policemen from Aylesworth on duty every night in the house. Count to this Lady Aveling and her jewellery. One of them went 4 and 6 last night off second footman, tossing."
Towards sunset next day, Mr. Watkins, virgin canvas, easel, and a very considerable case of other appliances in hand, strolled up the pleasant pathway through the beech woods to Hammerpond Park, and pitched his apparatus in a strategic position, commanding the house. Here he was observed by Mr. Raphael Sant, who was returning across the park from a study of the chalk pits. His curiosity having been fired by Pawson's account of the new arrival, he turned aside with the idea of discussing nocturnal art. Mr. Watkins was apparently unaware of his approach. A friendly conversation with Lady Aveling's butler had just terminated, and that individual, surrounded by the 3 pet dogs which it was his duty to take for an airing after dinner had been served, was receding in the distance. Mr. Watkins was mixing colour with an air of great industry. Sant, approaching more nearly, was surprised to see the colour in question was as harsh and brilliant an emerald green as it is possible to imagine. Having cultivated an extreme sensibility to colour from his earliest years, he drew the air in sharply between his teeth at the very first glimpse of this brew. Mr. Watkins turned round. He looked annoyed.
"What on earth are you going to do with that beastly green?" "If you come here interrupting my work," said Mr. Watkins, "I'm going to paint your face with it." Sant retired, for he was a humorist and a peaceful man. Going down the hill, he met Porson and Wainwright. "Either that man is a genius or he's a dangerous lunatic," said he. "Just go up and look at his green." To Porson and Wainwright, Mr. Watkins was less aggressive, and explained that the green was intended to be the first coating of his picture. It was, he admitted, in response to a remark, an absolute new method, invented by himself. Twilight deepened. First one, then another star appeared. The house lost all the details of its architecture and became a dark grey outline. And then the windows of the salon shone out brilliantly. The conservatory was lighted up, and here and there a bedroom window burnt yellow. Had anyone approached the easel in the park, it would have been found deserted. One brief, uncivil word in brilliant green sullied the purity of its canvas. Mr. Watkins was busy in the shrubbery with his assistant, Jim, who had discreetly joined him from the carriage drive.
"That's the dressing room," he said to his assistant. "And as soon as the maid takes the candle away and goes down to supper, we'll call in. Have you fixed that there wire across the path from the laundry?"
He cautiously approached the house until he stood below the dressing room window and began to put together his folding ladder. He was much too experienced a practitioner to feel any unusual excitement. Jim was reconnoitering the smoking room. Suddenly, close beside Mr. Watkins in the bushes, there was a violent crash and a stifled curse. Someone had tumbled over the wire which his assistant had just arranged. He heard feet running on the gravel pathway beyond. Mr. Watkins, like all true artists, was a singularly shy man, and he incontinently dropped his folding ladder and began running circumspectly through the shrubbery. He was indistinctly aware of two people hot upon his heels, and he fancied that he distinguished the outline of his assistant in front of him. In another moment, he had vaulted the low stone wall bounding the shrubbery and was in the open park. Two thuds on the turf followed his own leap. It was a close chase in the darkness through the trees. Mr. Watkins was a loosely built man and in good training, and he gained hand over hand upon the hoarsely panting figure in front. Neither spoke, but as Mr. Watkins pulled up alongside, a qualm of awful doubt came over him. The other man turned his head at the same moment and gave an exclamation of surprise.
"It's not Jim," thought Mr. Watkins.
And simultaneously, the stranger flung himself, as it were, at Watkins' knees, and they were forthwith grappling on the ground together.
"Lend a hand, Bill!"
cried the stranger as the third man came up. And Bill did, two hands, in fact, and some accentuated feet. The fourth man, presumably Jim, had apparently turned aside and made off in a different direction. At any rate, he did not join the trio. Mr. Watkins' memory of the incidents of the next 2 minutes is extremely vague. He has a dim recollection of having his thumb in the corner of the mouth of the first man and feeling anxious about its safety, and for some seconds at least he held the head of the gentleman answering to the name of Bill to the ground by the hair. He was also kicked in a great number of different places, apparently by a vast multitude of people. Then the gentleman, who was not Bill, got his knee below Mr. Watkins' diaphragm and tried to curl him up upon it. When his sensations became less entangled, he was sitting upon the turf, and 8 or 10 men, the night was dark and he was rather too confused to count, standing round him, apparently waiting for him to recover. He mournfully assumed that he was captured. But he noticed very quickly that his wrists were not handcuffed, and then a flask of brandy was put in his hands. This touched him a little. It was such unexpected kindness.
"He's a-coming round," said a voice which he fancied as belonging to the Hammerpond second footman.
"We've got them, sir, both of them,"
said the Hammerpond butler, the man who had handed him the flask.
"Thanks to you."
No one answered this remark, yet he failed to see how it applied to him.
"He's fair dazed," said a strange voice. "The villains half murdered him."
Mr. Teddy Watkins decided to remain fair dazed until he had a better grasp of the situation. He perceived that two of the black figures round him stood side by side with a dejected air, and there was something in the carriage of their shoulders that suggested to his experienced eye hands that were bound together. Two. In a flash, he rose to his position. He emptied the little flask and staggered, obsequious hands assisting him, to his feet. There was a sympathetic murmur.
"Shake hands, sir, shake hands," said one of the figures near him. "Permit me to introduce myself. I am very greatly indebted to you. It was the jewels of my wife, Lady Aveling, which attracted these scoundrels to the house."
"Very glad to make your lordship's acquaintance," said Teddy Watkins.
"I presume you saw the rascals making for the shrubbery and dropped down on them."
That's exactly how it happened," said Mr. Watkins.
"Two of the policemen were out by the gates," said Lord Aveling, "and followed up the three of you. I doubt if you could have secured the two of them. It was confounded plucky of you all the same."
The party was now moving towards the house.
"You walk rather lame. May I offer you my arm?"
And instead of entering Hammerpond House by the dressing-room window, Mr. Watkins entered it, slightly intoxicated, and inclined now to cheerfulness again, on the arm of a real live peer, and by the front door. "This," thought Mr. Watkins, "is burgling in style." The scoundrels, seen by the gaslight, proved to be mere local amateurs, unknown to Mr. Watkins, and they were taken down into the pantry, and there watched over by the three policemen, two gamekeepers with loaded guns, the butler, an ostler, and a carman, until the dawn allowed of their removal to Hazelhurst police station. Mr. Watkins was made much of in the salon. They devoted a sofa to him, and would not hear of a return to the village that night. Lady Aveling was sure he was brilliantly original, and said her idea of Turner was just such another rough, half-inebriated, deep-eyed, brave and clever man. Someone brought up a remarkable little folding ladder that had been picked up in the shrubbery, and showed him how it was put together. They also described how wires had been found in the shrubbery, evidently placed there to trip up unwary pursuers. It was lucky he had escaped these snares. And they showed him the jewels. Mr. Watkins had the sense not to talk too much, and in any conversational difficulty fell back on his internal pains. At last he was seized with stiffness in the back and yawning. Everyone suddenly awoke to the fact that it was a shame to keep him talking after his affray, so he retired early to his room, the little red room next to Lord Aveling's suite. The dawn found a deserted easel bearing a canvas with a green inscription in Hammerpond Park, and it found Hammerpond House in commotion. But if the dawn found Mr. Teddy Watkins and the Aveling diamonds, it did not communicate the information to the police.